This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. Exciting news at your house this week and lots of mixed emotions with the littlest kid out the door to school again.
Yes, yes. So last week, my youngest did. He went off to boarding school, which is so bizarre because we're all here in the same city and he's heading off to boarding school. And it's strange because he's not meant to be going to school yet. Obviously, we're all meant to be in Qatar, but due to, you know, cancer and COVID, we ended up here. But yes, it didn't start well. He went on day one and was not loving it, let's just say that. And I do have a son with a sense of the dramatic. So I was getting texts with things like, I could stay here, but I'll have to change. If you want me to change and be a completely different person, then I'll stay here. But which kind of reminded me of my girlfriend Chrissy always says when her parents dropped her at boarding school, she said to them, if you leave me here, I will never ever speak to you again. And then I only found out on the weekend that my girlfriend Penny, who came from a sheep property, she evidently said to her dad, I hope all the sheep die and you can't afford to pay the bills and I have to come home.
Oh my goodness. When I was dropped at boarding school, I was 11. Everyone was crying. I looked around and thought, shit, everyone's crying. Maybe I should cry too. I looked at my parents, couldn't do it, and I was so excited. I was so excited, and I never, ever looked back. Like, I really, I mean, of course you have ups and downs and bits and bobs and whatever, but I couldn't get it. I didn't understand why it would not be exciting just to be around people your own age 24 hours a day.
I think you may be the exception rather than the rule. I think because I was very excited to go, and when they did the drop and run, I was very happy. But then it all settled in. Sort of about 3 weeks later, I was kind of like, you know, when you send your toddler off to nursery or maybe more kindergarten, and they suddenly realize, oh, hang on, I've got to do this every day. Do you know, that was me. But, of course, Nikki, the other little piece of information that you alluded to with the excitement is that my husband had his MRI results back on Friday, and it appears that there is no evidence of disease, the old NED, which is what we like to hear.
Yay!
Yay! Big yay. So no need for surgery right now, which is just absolutely amazing. So they want him to have another scan in 3 months because obviously having all of – he had some really high, heavy-duty chemo and radio, and so you don't get the clearest of clear pictures, but, you know, so far so very, very good. So, yes, we are tracking along.
That is super, super exciting and amazing news, and – you know, everyone needs a tiny bit of good news in COVID. So that's
absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Nikki, I have a question for you in our four fact questions. And I thought about this the other day because I was thinking about something came up in the Two Fat Expats about home leave allowance and travel allowance and whatever. And I thought, well, this is interesting. I wonder how this is working not only for expats but also the companies they work for. And I was going to ask you, Nikki, do you find that you are saving money or spending money due to travel restrictions? And I know that some expats have savings accounts that are solely dedicated to travel because there are some expats that is why they are expats. They do it because they want to travel. And I know that some people are now doing local travel rather than international travel. So maybe they're spending just as much or, you know, changing the budget. But do you find you have any more cash or less with being sort of a little bit more restricted now?
Well, we don't have a specific travel account, and we don't have a travel allowance at all. We're very localized on those terms. We're also running two households at the moment, even though one of them isn't there.
Yeah.
And as are you, but
as am I. Yes.
And so also we have IB, our final year IB students. So we didn't actually have that much travel planned since after summer.
Yes.
After my missed Greek villa vacation, I do have a whopping great credit with Airbnb. So I am looking at come next spring when it starts to warm up, I'll be cashing that check in as quickly as I can, because I think that that's probably the first time we'll be able to travel. So the answer is some parts of our life are a little bit smaller because we're not doing any traveling or planning things. Just all because all our travel is in all within the same budget, so we don't have a separate travel budget. So we just look at our budget, and probably we are saving a little bit more. So when we have wanted to splurge a little bit on, you know, getting something, I've just gone with, okay, let's do that, as opposed to let's wait to next month or the next month, because that's within the budget that we've got. So yeah, I don't know at the end of the year that we're going to have a great big pile of money for travel. I think that that's going to go into some sort of thing like superannuation or savings at the end of the day, because we're now in that time frame when you're looking at moving countries, and also when you're looking at moving countries, which we are doing, there are hidden costs in that. You know, as much as you say the company pays
absolutely, to move,
there are lots of hidden costs in moving. And so I think that we'd rather be, you know, a little bit captain sensible and just decide that we're just going to, you know, keep it a bit low key and close to the chest. And then when we move, when there's things we need to buy that maybe are not from IKEA, we can get them.
Yeah. And I wonder now with some companies, because, you know, we do get a travel allowance. It's, you know, negotiated into G salary. And it's based on business class flights, but we get the lump sum of cash and then we spend it how we spend it. But I wonder too that there are many people who that's not how it works. How it works is they travel and then they claim.
Yes, which is what we used to do, yeah.
Yeah, so they book the tickets and whatever. And I wonder then for many sort of international companies, is there a write-off with that in that they're noticing that they're not spending? I mean, if you are a large maybe oil and gas company or one of those people that's doing it, you would have to notice the lack of travel costs and also the lack of moving people, because I imagine those people aren't moving people like they used to move people as well. They might just keep Susie in Singapore and Kevin in Hong Kong, you know, for an extra year while all this goes on. Do you know, there might be a little bit of that happening. I'm not sure. So, yeah, I just wondered what it was like for people out there. It might be a question maybe for the forum to sort of ask people on the page sort of what they are finding financially with a change in travel.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that people are very considerate of the point of view that the world is so uncertain.
Yes.
So even if you have a job and it doesn't look like you're going to lose it, that's, you know, and you look at the travel around the world, but then you look at people who are without jobs and without homes in some cases and without visas and, you know, how much money people have had to spend just to get somewhere, which is significantly more than they would have.
Yes.
So I think the people who are expats or who have lived this life a long time or even for a short time are more aware of that. So they might have just be banking that money, any money that they do have, just on the off chance that they need to use it in an emergency situation.
Yes, because, of course, you know, I'm taking it from the side of the person who is staying put and not going anywhere. But the other extreme is we have the people that now desperately have to get somewhere. I had a girlfriend who sent me a note yesterday. She's leaving Qatar forever and she's taking her two sons with her. They're going back to New Zealand. Their quoted airfare was 140,000 reals. So that you divide that by three for Aussie dollars. So just
oh my word.
Oh yes. And that was, and I think the flight is end of November because they were waitlisted for everything until the end of November. And even then, they're not hugely confident that it's going to work. So, yes, there's the two different types of travel expenses at the moment, isn't there? They're the people that are trying to just get the hell out of Dodge, or there's the people that are staying put and, you know, not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, there definitely is. So, Kirsty, on that, now we've touched on COVID, so difficult times. There's elections in some countries, and, you know, I talk a lot of my time in America and you too about how you were friends, very good friends with people who had extremely different political opinions to yours. But, absence doesn't always make the heart grow fonder. And so, we've spoken about social media before and how it has its ups and downs during the pandemic. But now COVID itself is creating social media controversy. And I don't mean in just masks versus unmasks. So a recent post here in a local group for Hamburg, it's very common. There's a group here and it's mainly just for women. And it's for women to connect and sort of meet up and whatever. And the post said, who wants to go for cocktails? You know, we can go out this week in this little area of Hamburg called Schanze, which is a COVID hotspot because of the bar hopping scene. And somebody posted and said, yeah, that's great. Perhaps give it a miss because of COVID. You know, you don't want to go meet a whole lot of people you don't know in a COVID hotspot. And it just, the whole thing got totally out of hand and someone was evicted from the group
for
bringing up the point of, and this person, I should add, is a person that's been in the group for a very long time, almost since it started, and has run a lot of activities for that group.
So sorry, are you saying the person who was evicted was the person who said maybe you shouldn't go?
Correct. Oh. That was the person who ended up being evicted. And I had sort of seen it unfold, and I didn't think it was very controversial to say maybe you should go. You know, I don't think there's any time you can look at any media in the world that you don't see Europe, the numbers are going up. And, you know, we should all be a little bit more responsible. Every few days we have a press conference where the government's giving us some sort of updated information and sort of warnings and be more sensible, be more responsible. The person involved in this situation knows personally three people who've died due to COVID. Oh. And so obviously that's also something you have to take into consideration when you're in a social media situation, that you don't know the full backstory of the other person. And so I had watched this unfold. I thought, that's a fair comment. And then I sort of had just flicked away. And then I saw on her personal page a few days later, she said, look, I just want to let everyone know, you know, this happened in this group and I was kicked out and I've had a few days to think about it. And I don't really understand why they kicked me out, but I stand by my comment that, you know, you shouldn't be going and meeting people you don't know in a COVID hotspot. I think that's fair.
So I have to ask, and I think this is going to be one of those Australia, I'm sitting in Australia, you're sitting in Germany. Why are those places open if they're hotspots? Like, why have they not shut down cocktails?
Well, okay, so they are, so where COVID has been found, those bars are closed. And they close for a certain number of days till they do the contract tracing, until they cleanse the bar area, whatever. But what it is known is that the contraction zone is in this particular strip of bar areas. And so what we do in Germany is not the same as what you do in Australia. So we track number of people per 100,000 infections. And that's the way that Germany does it. And we talked about this last week a little bit, and I've sent you some statistics during the week so you can have a look at how we see it. Mm-hmm. And so what the government has been trying to do is say, okay, you all need to be responsible. So you need to be responsible for yourself. So in those bars, you have to sit at a table. You have to wear a mask while you're not at the table. But the point is that in the bar, and all the staff in those bars wear masks, etc. But the point about alcohol and COVID is that the more alcohol you drink, the more likely you are to.
You get.
Yeah. And the other thing is when you meet people that you don't know, you don't know where those people go when they're not there. If you're meeting a group of friends, that's very different to meeting people you don't know. Because when you meet your friends, you know the level of seriousness that they take. COVID, you know what they're doing more or less. You have an idea. Okay, you don't know everything, but you have more of an idea about their approach. So there might be people that you choose to meet or not meet. If you're meeting in a bar at this time, I mean, I didn't rule out going to a restaurant on the weekend here, but we decided against it because the birthday boy didn't want to go in the end. But you sort of, you make the choice based on your own personal decisions. But I just think that, I don't know, I just found it really, just like, gosh, it's just another freaking thing that COVID is doing, you know, as if we didn't have enough.
Mm. So back to the point about, you know, people in groups and COVID and social media.
So my question just was like, is this the next stage? Is it about social media being divisive? Is it about COVID adding an extra layer? Or is it about we have shorter fuses? Is it about we've had enough bad news? What is it about? Why are these things happening? Why do we think they're happening? And this happened within an expat community, because it happened within a community specifically designed to help expats meet and connect.
Yes.
And, you know, that is difficult at this time.
Mm. You know, you're making me think of my little Henry hot dog this week going to boarding school, where he had that moment where he was in a conversation with some kids and realised that there were people that had very different, and I don't want to say political views, because when you're 14, I think your views are still forming, aren't they? But there were a couple of things were said that made him think, oh my gosh, I didn't know that people were going to think this way or think these things, or I hadn't realised that in his international world, he'd probably, weirdly, being in an international school, probably been in a very liberal environment, do you know, where everybody's a global, you know, global citizen. And so now he's somewhere where maybe everybody's not having such global views. You know, I as a small example was he talked about children in cages and someone said to him, well, that's their fault, they shouldn't have left, you know, they made the choice to go. And he suddenly found himself going, oh, I'm a long way from home sort of thing. And but he had a really good time with that person that he was with and thinks that that person was really nice to him and helped him out and showed him places and took him to things and shared snacks and did those things. And I think it all comes to that, doesn't it? You hit the nail on the head, Nikki, when you said we don't know people's backstories on social media and we don't know where they're coming from or who they are. And it happens all the time when we all have these things going on in our lives, and you can think someone's an absolute idiot and then hear a little bit more about their life and go, oh God, they're going through a really rough time, or you know, they're a really sweet person, or they do whatever we're losing it. I don't know what the answer is, but we're losing it through, as the world grows and with social media, we're losing those relationships where we're with people who are vastly different from us.
Yeah, and it's the algorithms, isn't it? It's the algorithms.
Yes, it's the algorithms.
I was just going to say, I have had to even recently on my Facebook feed seek out my friends in the US who I know have different political opinions to me, and I've just done searches for them because their just regular posts have just disappeared off my feed algorithm wise. And so I'm thinking, what are they doing? Like, they have strong opinions about these things. And so I've gone in and found them and seen that they've done posts, but the algorithm hasn't shown me. So I just think, gosh, the algorithms have so much to blame. You know, and we're old enough now to remember life before social media, and also to you know, a teenager's world is so black and white in a lot of ways. And, you know, we're all about, in our hearts, we're always talking about there's gray. The world is a lot of gray. It's not all black and white. And our teens really struggle with that from time to time.
Yes.
And so I think we can, in a way, manage a little bit more the emotions and the feelings and the thoughts about people who think very differently to us and sometimes post things, etc. But younger people don't not necessarily always have that at the front of their mind. It doesn't mean they're not capable of it. It means just that it's not always there. And I think that that's then that makes that a little bit harder. And I would say that in this group, in this commentary group, there was the person that made the comment about, you know, you should maybe think about that was, you know, more along my age. And the person that made the comment about, you know, let's go out, and then all the people that backed her up were probably in a younger age bracket from looking at their Facebook photos. So I would, and then that's yes. just me just great sweeping generalizations, throwing it all out there. But I'm just saying like that those things also, that's also what you have to take into account when you have all those conversations and think all those things as well.
Nikki, on to different things. Have you ever had your credit card hacked? And if so, where were you? And I'm going to, my friend Kathy tells me that her and her partner, Andrew, have a comment in their relationship where they say, let's not give each other homework, meaning, you know, don't just ask your partner to tell you something or do something that you could go and find out yourself. Nikki, I'm giving you some homework. I want to know. There was someone who posted in our group the other day. They said, I've got a strange situation. Our US credit card was hacked recently and there were 52 fraudulent Amazon charges. They lived in the EU. She said, we notified the credit card company. We cancelled the card. We contacted Amazon. We changed the password. The charges got removed from the account, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, that was all a couple of weeks ago. And now her parents in the US have just started getting all these random packages addressed to them. 8 so far. Her mother had opened 2 and one was random Christmas crap, as she said, and Halloween decor. They're not addressed from Amazon, but they do have return addresses. And I thought, I've heard about this. I've heard people talking about this, about getting random things from China with, you know, no receipts or invoices, and they don't know what to do. What is it, Nikki? Why is this happening? And also tell me about if you've ever had your credit card.
Okay, it's a two-stage question.
Yes.
Yes, we have had our credit card hacked twice. Once in South Africa, where I think we put a card into a machine and it had a, you know, one of those copying things on it. But in South Africa, the benefit of the system is that they're really wired for fraud. So as soon as it happened and as soon as the first fake purchase went underway, the bank immediately contacted us and said, we've just cancelled all your cards. I said, why? And they told me, and then immediately issued new cards. So that was really no problem. The other time was when we were in the US and we also, the bank called us and said, did you do, you know, when there's out of order transactions or transactions that are, you know, in countries where you don't normally make transactions, they give you a call sometimes. And they said, I think somewhere in Central America, someone was buying up a storm at all the supermarkets with our credit card. And we don't know how that happened, but they called us and they canceled the card and issued a new one. So we haven't had this particular problem, but I did read about this problem. And it's to do with, so you know when you go on Amazon and you look at all the reviews, and then there's things that say verified purchase. So all the reviews on Amazon you take with a grain of salt because you're like, well, it could be anyone on here writing a review. It could be the company. It could be anything. And then when you see one that says verified purchase, what Amazon is trying to tell you is that someone actually purchased this and it was distributed to their address and this is their, this is the review. And so I have heard of this scam in terms of, and I don't know if this is the same scam that's being run here, but I've heard of this scam in terms of they will then see their name pop up with a review on Amazon of this product that they've received, this Halloween gear and this Christmas crap. And it will say, you know, I'm Jenny from Georgia and we received this and it was excellent quality and we really loved it and it's great value for money, yada, yada, yada. And it will come up with verified purchase because all Amazon knows is someone has paid for it and it has been delivered. So it's not one of those just, oh, I've just come on Amazon to rave about this product because I'm a member and I like this product. And so people place more value on a verified purchase review of a product than they do on a non-verified purchase review. So that is my understanding of this particular scam situation. Uh-huh. And, of course, for the company, it's worth it to distribute some. You know, and there could be companies, for all I know, that are middle people that just say, look, we'll get you reviews of your product. And the company involved says, I don't care how you get them. And who knows what that middle company does.
Yeah. Because
it's not Nike, is it? You know, it's all these sort of smaller independent distributors. And they're like, we don't care how you get us the reviews, just get them. So, I'm thinking that that's what this is, but I'm not 100% sure. But I just want to go back to let's not give each other homework. Every morning when my husband says to me, what's the temperature outside? I'm going to say to him, do your own freaking homework. Because he always says.
I know. I loved it as a phrase. When she said it, I loved it because I do that too. My example where G does it to me that drives me nuts is he uses my telephone number as the one to give people to call back on for different things, do you know? And I go, sorry, who are you? What are you doing? Oh, yes. Yeah, I think I know about that. Yeah, I think he wants you to come on Tuesday. Jan, I'm thinking, why did you give him my number? Yes, but all those, do you know what the weather's going to be on Tuesday or what time do we have to be at parent-teacher interview when you've already sent the meeting request with all the times? That is giving people homework. And I just loved it. Kathy said, oh, we have this phrase, we say we're not going to give each other homework. And I thought, oh, I love it. But it has made me conscious now of when I do give people homework, which is what I was doing when I was dutifully typing in this question. I was thinking, oh, Nikki will know. Nikki will be able to explain that to me. She'll know.
But I love that. The question's good, but I also don't, let's not give each other homework. I like that couple. That's very good. Because the last question, which is probably a little bit more poignant now that you've got your excellent results with G and his scans. Yes. But how are you feeling about Qatar? I mean, how are expats feeling about locations that they're not living in but are still their current location or home? I think that that's really hard. And I've thought about you a lot when, you know, I see you, you know, talk about, and we talk to about people you're going to miss and are leaving when you're not there, and you know, the beagle, how you have your weekly calls with the beagle, and you know, the things that you've left beside your bed, whatever. So I asked the question because I saw in the group that someone had returned to Beijing after going away for the weekend and there had been a Christmas tree left up.
Yes, I saw that too. I love that. And then they decided they were just going to leave it up because it made them feel good.
And so I asked the question in the group. I said, you know, is anyone, obviously I'm here, so, and I didn't go anywhere, so I haven't been stuck anywhere. So, I mean, I don't have the experience, but there were some people that commented in the group. So there were quite a few, but Vicky had said, we just returned to Doha today. We were stuck out of country after the borders closed 2 days early, unexpectedly. We spent 7 months staying with different family members in the US, had to do a 7-day hotel quarantine, and we can finally come home. Not even to the same home we left because we had to move remotely.
Oh my goodness.
And then Shirley said, I left Indonesia at the end of February as my daughter who lives there had been taken ill and was in hospital. 7 months later, I'm still trying to get back to my husband as my residence visa had expired when I became stuck in Scotland during lockdown. Mm-hmm. It's been processed by the embassy in London and hopefully I'll get it soon and can fly back next weekend. So I think that was over a week ago. So I will get an update from Shirley in the group because hopefully she's back where she wants to be. Cindy had left Beijing for Chinese New Year, which was similar to a lot of people, and couldn't get back till July, and that was lucky. It was like a COVID time catch-all. School bags still packed, calendar still on January, all our Christmas and Chinese New Year decorations still up, Lego builds half done. Luckily, someone had emptied the apartment of the rotting food, but piles of laundry awaited us on our return. And the last one was Megan said, I left in March, thought I would be back in August and still not back. And the hardest thing is a sense of not belonging, even more so than usual. I feel like I'm straddling multiple countries and cities and have just felt so lost this year.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, in a similar vein, I had asked in the group as well if there were other people that were like me that were feeling, because I was saying I felt very displaced and discombobulated, and I was amazed. I have to go back and have a look, but there were lots and lots and lots of messages from people saying, yep, that's our situation, where they're, where they're separated from their partner. I used that phrase to G the other day. I said, you know, I'm so glad I put this message out in the group, and it did make me feel a little bit better that there's so many other people that are like me that are separated from their partners. And she said, just steady up with the separated. Like, separated has a really bad connotation to it. We will be away from each other, but not separated. I was like, oh, okay. Good call. So yes, how am I feeling about Doha? I miss Doha, and it's so bizarre because then I think, well, why are you missing Doha so much? You've got everything here right now. Do you know, you've got your children here, you're safe, you've got your parents. I have some issues with my parents at the moment that it is really good that I'm here to be with them. It would be an absolute catastrophe if I was in Doha right now, personally. Yeah. So I am very, very lucky to be here. But at the same stage, you can't help but feel that this life that you built for sort of 10 years is just fading, and that it's sort of not crystal clear. I really feel, because I'm losing so many friends at the moment, you know, I have really, really good friends, probably our best friends. He's just got a job in Saudi, and so they're leaving, and I just can't quite fathom the idea that I'm going to get back there and they'll be gone. And, you know, Nikki, you made a point saying, oh, I can't believe, I think you said, you know, you're getting upset that people are going to be gone and you're not even there. Like, you can't be getting sad about that when you're not even there. But, yeah, it is just that feeling of that Doha won't feel like Doha without them, and that you haven't had the goodbye, you haven't had the farewell lunch, you haven't had given the present, you haven't been a part of the process, any of that. I'll just get back and they'll be gone. Our neighbours have moved, which is strange. We weren't particularly close with the neighbours, but they were the neighbours, you know.
They were the people you saw when you walked in and out of the house.
Yeah, yeah. And Henry watered their plants when they went on holiday and, you know, fed their animals and did things like that, and now that's not going to happen. So that just feels weird. I can't imagine how many other people have moved on our compound. But also, when I return, I will no longer have any of my children there, because we've had to put Henry into school here and we're not about to pull him out and take him back again. So that's all really strange. It's like, oh, there'll be no more school drop-offs or baseball games or any of that sort of, you know, life there. And then, of course, there is this huge fear of G looking after his health while he's there, because this comes back, I guess, to like the chat room where the person's going to go to the bar because they feel quite comfortable. I keep thinking about G going back to work, and he does work with a lot of young people. And I think, yeah. And I hear things like I heard that a company had a farewell dinner for someone a couple of months ago, and those people were farewelling on their way to Perth for their next assignment. When they got to Perth, they tested positive for COVID. Now, they had been at a company dinner, you know, with 10 or 15 people. So you go, what? Like, why were they having a dinner? Or things of, you know, such and such got COVID because they got it at the gym. And it's like, the gym's open, you know, whereas it just, there's so many things because I'm not there, I don't understand. If I was there, I'm sure people would say, oh, yeah, this and this happened and it happened safely, or that there's these rules in place. You know, when you're not there, you judge and you don't know because you're not there to see. So there's all sorts of ideas. So I do really worry about, I know that he'll be good and he'll do everything to look after his health, but I don't know about those around him, you know, whether they're in the same boat.
It's like drivers, right? You know that you're a good driver and you're responsible, but you can't be responsible for every driver on the road. And that's how accidents happen, because some people are bad drivers. So, yeah, I totally understand that feeling. And I was a bit tongue-in-cheek when I said, you know, how can you be sad they're leaving when you're not even there? Because, of course, I know how you can be sad they're leaving when you're not even there.
Yeah.
And, you know, your world is changing around you. And,
yes,
you know, in so many ways you're so lucky. Lucky is a bad word. But, you know, to be in Australia with your family at this time is 100% the right place to be, and you don't regret it for 1 second. But you're thinking of your life that you're living up to the point where all this happened, and it's so difficult. And I can't, so difficult. And I feel for people like Megan who said, you know, I feel like I'm straddling multiple countries and cities and have just felt so lost this year. I really, I understand that. I don't have that feeling, but I feel so much not being able to go to Australia. And, you know, I really feel the barrier, and but I wasn't planning on going, but I feel that barrier. And, you know, my mother-in-law on the weekend, it was my husband's birthday yesterday, and, you know, they were in contact, and she said, you know, I just don't know when I'm going to see you guys again. And she did have a trip to Europe that was cancelled in the summer because of COVID. And so, you know, it's really... I totally get it. I totally get how people are feeling. It's really, really tough. And so once again, guys, we are thinking of everybody and all the different situations that there are out there. And we understand that no one's situation is perfect and no one's situation is the same. And, you know, big hugs from us.
Okay, Nikki, last week I talked to you about it taking 66 days to form a habit. And I said, I wanted you to go away and think about something that you would do for 66 days, like that a habit that you would like to form. Now, you had every right to say to me, I don't want to form a new habit, Kirsty. I don't want to do it. But you didn't. You said, okay, I will. So what are you going to do?
Well, I am going to do 66 days of Peloton. Now, I had never liked Peloton. I don't like riding bikes, and it's something that I just don't like it. The exercise I choose is never bike riding. We have had a Peloton. We brought it with us here to Germany, and I just know people here who just love their Peloton, and I think I just don't like it, but I think maybe I've never given it a chance. Now, Peloton itself doesn't have it's not all just bike riding. You know, they have an app and they have all sorts of things. They have yoga and stretching and circuits and all sorts of things you can do on their app, as well as ride your bike. So I thought, I'm not committing to 66 days of bike riding. I'm committing to 66 days of doing something on the Peloton app. And I'm not saying it has to be half an hour and 90 minutes. I'm just saying it has to be something. So some days it might be 10 minutes, some days it might be 20, some days it might be an hour. I don't know, but I'm happy to commit to 66 days of that. And if that gets me in that habit and then I'm a convert, well, then maybe we'll talk about getting the new screen for the bike that my husband's wanted since they came out.
Okay.
What about you?
Well, I went to see an exercise physiologist the other day. Nikki, do you know what an exercise physiologist is?
No, but I'm so glad that you've done the homework for me, Kirsty, and you're going to tell me.
So what it was I actually saw in a group chat, someone was talking about, you know, when they're reaching out and they're asking everyone, you know, do you think I've got a brain tumor or do you think I've got whatever? And everybody starts speculating. And then the sensible voice of reason that came in was Nikki Parkinson, you know, Nikki from Styling yeah. You, who is an amazing woman. And if you want to have a look at someone that really knows what they're doing clothing wise, Styling You is a great site to go to. But Nikki said to this person, hey, maybe step one, go and see an exercise physiologist first and then, you know, go from there, because she was sort of, you know, keeping it all professional and sensible. And I thought, what do they do? And an exercise physiologist is the person that if you're, say, 50 like I am and you go, oh, you know, I have this recurring sort of pain under here, I do whatever, and you go, I'd really like to go to, you know, F45 or whatever, but I'm scared I might have a heart attack on the spot, or I'm scared I might, you know, do this, hurt myself, or I'm not quite sure if that shoulder's meant to do whatever, which does really start to go in your brain as you get older, right? You think, I can't do that. I might die on the spot. An exercise physiologist will sit down with you. They're not a physio, but they go down, they do the full, okay, what are your concerns? What are you worried about? What would you like? What, you know, which bit hurts, which bit doesn't? Okay, let's start here. And so I sent my husband off to see the exercise physiologist when he was at, sort of at the end of chemo, because he's got a lot of aches and pains and things and, you know, all sorts of stuff that has happened to his nether regions from being having radiology and whatever. And she did it. She got him all sorted. And I thought, all right, I need to go for myself, because I still have recurring things from when I had cancer, from, you know, people cutting bits out of me and burning bits and doing whatever. And I have to say, Nikki, it was fantastic. It was really, really good. So I got my basic plan and my stretches and my things. I've got to go back again in 2 weeks and, you know, look at what I've done and take the next step, etc. So I'm going to do 66 days of stretching. I've got about 20 minutes of floor exercises and things I have to do. It's kind of very similar to yoga in a way, but like proper stretching exercises. And yes, I want to make it a habit. And I don't think I can, with my life of, you know, some days you're driving someone into town at 6 a.m. to get them somewhere and some days you're not. I'm going to just say it doesn't have to be every morning or it doesn't have to be at a set time, but I just every day there has to be 20 minutes of stretching, 66 days starting tomorrow.
And yeah, because I mean, I'm at the stage now where, you know, my husband and I have touch your toes competitions because that's how exciting our life is. And before I do that, I have to do a few minutes of stretching. I have to do, you know, you're not as nimble as you used to be. So stretching is definitely an excellent idea because, yeah, I mean, that's a good idea. Okay, I'll look for that on the socials, Kirsty.
All right, I want to see it on your socials too. Like, what are we going to hashtag it so I can check out that you do? We do 66 days? 66
days of. Yeah, we'll just do 66 days of. Hashtag 66 days of.
All right. Okay, Nikki, how excited are you about The Crown coming out on November the 15th?
I am so excited. I have watched the preview clip.
The trailer.
The trailer.
Yes, me too. It looks good, doesn't it? I'm so glad we've got to Diana.
I feel like in the past, it's been in the past, and so I don't want to be disappointed because I remember Diana. Like, I remember those things. I remember watching the royal wedding. I remember, you know, Diana and what she did. I remember the births of William and Harry and all those things. And so I think, I just don't want this season to be disappointing. And I'm excited about it, but I'm very mixed feelings about my anticipation. Yes. Because I have really enjoyed the past seasons of The Crown. I really have. And I've looked at them sort of as a historical, sort of, you know, a dramatic historical view. I mean, obviously not everything's right and they're making up, you know, they've got to imagine the conversations, etc. But I have really enjoyed it, and that's the one thing I'm just a little bit nervous about this season. But yes, I am excited they've got up to Diana, and she looks freaking exactly the same as Diana if you have a look at those things on the trailer, like very similar to look at. So I mean,
yeah, and the dress, the wedding dress, when they've got the shot from the back, it's like, oh my gosh, that is perfect. Yes. Now, Nikki, last week I was telling you about how I've started reading Caitlin Moran, and now that's another thing. Now that I've listened to a couple of interviews, the Brits don't say Caitlin, they say Catlin Moran.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yes. Interesting.
So I am now halfway through More Than a Woman, and I am really, really enjoying it. It's definitely written. I am the target market. It is so for me. But I had a recommendation from Eliza from LDC, who is, you know, part of our community, and we speak to her often. And she suggested I listen to a podcast called The Midpoint, which is hosted by Gabby Logan. I'm pretty sure she's BBC. Love, you know, that lovely British soothing,
calming,
you
know, voice.
Yeah. Voice. And The Midpoint is sort of based to people who are middle age, which they tell me in the intro is roughly from 37 onwards is middle age, which means I was a middle aged mother. I had my last child at 37, which I do remember them calling it a geriatric pregnancy.
I had a geriatric pregnancy at 36. Same thing, same.
Oh, there you go.
I think anyway, anything it's after 35 is geriatric pregnancy.
Ouch. Okay. Look, it was really good. I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, obviously there's that thing now where you hear the same story in every interview you listen to, where they're on point of telling you the same things, et cetera. And you go, oh, I heard her say this exact story. You know, we've talked about this before with people on book tours. One area they went to that I really liked, and it was because the host sort of brought in a story from her mother, but she was, as they were talking, they looked in because the interview was being held at Catlin's house, she called it, outside she called it a glass igloo. She must have some sort of, you know, atrium
conservatory
type situation, yeah. Conservatory outside. And the host said, oh, I can see your helper in there vacuuming the floor. And Catlin sort of quickly said something like, oh, can we just please pretend that I do my own vacuuming or something? And, you know, it was a lighthearted kind of jab. And I just recognized that tone as an expat, you know, when, you know, someone says, do you have help or do you have a maid? And you suddenly want to not sound as precious or as princess or as whatever as it does, as the image projects, do you know, yeah. Of, you see women do it all the time, and not if even if it's not as extravagant as, you know, being an expat and having someone help in the house, but it's even if you are living, you know, in your home country and you're working and you have someone come and clean your house, do you know, women always want to play that stuff down and not talk about the fact that the cleaner comes or that those things happen. They prefer to look like they've got it all, that, you know, that they've got it covered. And I really like Gabby's point. Number one, that those people were once called mother's helpers. They were never called father's helpers or parents' helpers. They were mother's helpers, which is interesting in itself. But also that we need to be more honest about these things, because of course if you are Catlin Moran, you are going to have a helper. If you've got two children and a full-time career and you're writing books and being on the radio and being on the television,
yeah,
whatever, you're not going to have time to vacuum your own floors. You're going to need someone to come in and do that stuff. And why – it was just, I thought, a really interesting discussion about why we do that to ourselves and why nobody has ever in a million years said, oh, yes, but he can only do that job because he has a nanny. Yeah. You know, whereas you
– all the time. You know, she can only do that job because she has a nanny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard she's got two nannies.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's never him that has the nanny. I wanted to say thank you, Liz. I really, really enjoyed that. And the other one I just listened to, it's a new podcast on the ABC called Days Like These. And the idea of this podcast is it's meant to be that, you know, they sell it as, you know, it's the best stories you hear from a friend of a friend, and the type of story that you hear and you just can't stop thinking about all day. And so the first one's come out, and it sort of starts with a man walking into a nightclub and being completely struck by someone on the dance floor, and then it sort of takes you through their romance and their relationship and their journey with IVF and wanting to start a family. But there is a twist to the tale, and it was good. They're quick. I think it was the actual podcaster will tell you that it's 22 minutes, but it's not. By the time they do, you know,
the preamble
and the intro, and there's a whole lot of stuff stacked onto the back of it because it's new. So I think I thought it was good. I don't know if I thought it was absolutely amazing, but it's the first one, right? So
yeah,
that's hard. And Nikki, you know, this bit is, we call it our three favorite things, and it's something you read or something you saw or something you listened to. But I want to do one this week was someone I saw. Now, I went to the football, so there were 25,000, so it was amazing, and it was a final, so it was electric. And the score, there was a lot of preamble, as there is with all finals, and, you know, there were villains cast and heroes, you know, whatever in all football games. And the villain was a player who had stepped on someone's head last week as he went to get up off the grass. So he was getting a lot of boos and a lot of, you know, a lot of stick from the crowd because he's sort of a serial offender. This is the fifth time this year that he has been cited or reported. Anyway, at the end of the game, the villain was interviewed very close to the home crowd and someone threw their drink on him. Not the can, but they literally splashed what they're drinking. I think it was a bourbon and Coke. Someone was saying, obviously they hadn't thought about how much it cost to buy a bourbon and Coke at the footy because they're not cheap. Yes. Anyway, and you don't so much see it because he's being interviewed and you just see this little, you know, a sort of sprinkle sort of go across and whatever. But in the broadcast, you then saw about 5 minutes later, the player in question was sort of given status or kudos because he walks over to a little boy who's from the opposition team who is crying, and the commentators say, oh, look at him, what a great guy, you know, sort of even though someone's throwing a drink at him, he's gone over to console the little boy. Well, I found out later that wasn't the full story. What had happened was someone had thrown their drink on the player, and the little boy from the opposing team, who was the supporter who was crying, said to his dad in amongst his tears, you know, oh, that's not right. You know, they shouldn't have done that, whatever. And the father said, you're absolutely right. Like, just because we lost, that person is a bad loser. And if you were going to be a true sports person, you would go and wish him luck for next week and, you know, tell him, good luck, you played well, off you go. And so you see the picture of this little boy who's got tears streaming. You know how children just can't cope with a loss? My own children were crying after the game, and they're big, but they, you know, they don't cope as well as adults. And this little boy walks up to him and he's crying and he's, you can tell, but he's trying to say to him, good luck next week, you know, I hope you win, sort of thing. And it's so beautiful. But I just thought the world needs more parents like that, and we need to be parents like that. And it made me think of my son at boarding school who heard something this week that he thought was disappointing and said to me, oh, I heard someone use a certain word about something or someone. And I said, you have to go and talk to someone about it, you know, like around you, if there's language being used that you're uncomfortable with. And, you know, he was told, well, it's up to you to be a leader. Do you know, like, the language doesn't change unless you change it, which is true. Language will not change unless you change it, unless you can say, you know, I don't use that word, or I'm not comfortable with that, or, you know, that sounds homophobic, as it did in this situation. But I just thought, as parents, you know, we have to say it too, you know. And it's hard as a parent because you can feel uncomfortable in a situation where you go, oh, this is all a little bit too aggro and a little bit too orcs. Let's just walk away. You know, we'll talk about it at home, what was bad about it and why it was bad or whatever. But that guy didn't. He sort of he had an action. And I thought, yeah. You need to have the action, don't you? It was just the perfect action, I thought, for the situation. He didn't confront the nasty man with the drink, but he went and did something really positive. I don't know. I wish I was that clever.
Well, once again, Kessie, very serious, very thoughtful things. My three, absolutely, you know, not the same level of but are we expats if we don't discuss Emily in Paris? Come on.
Oh, yes. So have you watched it?
Of course. Done.
And?
Oh, dear, dear. Well, I saw it. Obviously, it was a recommendation because Trash TV is my Netflix name. And
yes,
we popped up on the recommendations early on, and it was in the week that I was very involved, and I still have been involved with my Sing for Grace 2020 campaign. And so I actually wasn't watching any TV, I was on the social media a lot, and I saw on the socials a lot of people, particularly in the expats groups, discussing Emily in Paris because Emily is an expat in Paris. And, you know, I saw in some groups saying it's fantastic, all the French stereotypes are exact, the American stereotypes are exact, it's just perfect, the whole thing. And I saw some people saying, I can't believe anyone would watch this. I was like, oh, this sounds like it's for me. So, and it also sounds like, you know, it's not Borgen, so you can just lie with your eyes a little bit shut and sort of tune in and out. It is that 11 o'clock, let's bash an episode before bed thing. So I watched it, and look, you know, I can't recommend it, but I can't not recommend it. So, but I have to say, you know, it's interesting because if that's how Americans perceive their expat compatriots, I think it's problematic. But, you know, it did have a woman as the lead. You know, it could have been a guy going to Paris for a job. So it was a woman going to Paris for a job. So I would commend people on that.
But it never, ever was going to be. It was always going to be that whole Sex and the City kind of carry off to Paris, but not even done that well.
No.
Do you know, like when Carrie went to Paris, at least they, I don't know, I found that more believable.
Oh, it's not believable, but it's total fantasy, which is Corona time perfect. I mean, have you watched any of Emily in Paris?
True. Have you watched? I have, because same thing, exact same thing, popped up everywhere. And I think it was someone who was American may have said in our group, oh, I completely identified with it. And it made me giggle because the bit they identified with was the putting the vibrator and the wrong, you know, on the wrong voltage into the thing and turning off all the lights. Yeah. And I thought, wow, did that actually happen to you? Is that what? But what? I found it that I could not stand the stereotypes. And I sort of, for an expat, she didn't really have any expat dilemmas, did she, in the everyday one? She wasn't having to get her phone chip or pay her power bill or do any of those things. It was
all about the language.
It was more who's going to have lunch with me, and oh dear, I forgot to learn French. And shall I sleep with that incredibly attractive man who's in the apartment next door? I thought it was interesting because it was Darren Star, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, the executive producer. I just think, but it was made ahead of the pandemic, but it's perfect pandemic watching. I'm not sure it would have got quite as much buzz if it was in a non-pandemic world. I think it's just, you know, that lighthearted, if you can get past the stereotypes and just watch it for what it is, which is just like nothing.
Yeah.
It's very fast to the brain.
It wasn't even also just the stereotypes of the people in Paris. The Chinese friend who's, you know, meant to be from a wealthy Chinese family and whatever. That was like, oh, I'm really not sure about this, like where this fits into the.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I thought it was, that was their attempt at diversity. And then they were, I'm not sure that they got it. You know, like it was more stereotyping that just wasn't very good.
Yeah. And there is a strong hint of ageism with the way they talk about the older woman at the office, do you know, because of course she has to be feeling, you know, nervous and frightened about her own position because the younger, you know, more, you know, beautiful woman has arrived. Yeah. You know, I sort of thought, no, why do we have to have these two women in a relationship like that? Like,
yeah, why do we have to have the younger woman being the one making all the overtures? Like, I mean, there's some terrible stereotypes.
But you're right; it's very pretty, and it's very easy. You're right; it is a good form of escapism, but don't expect. Do expect to be slightly annoyed most of the way through it, but. Easy escapism. But, you know, I think I'd just as soon flick through my Instagram as I would watch Emily in Paris.
Well, I know. And it just depends what you feel like at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So last week I talked about missed connections and my wannabe friendship in Hong Kong that never kicked off.
Yes.
So this and then I talked about Bogan. And what I overlooked at the time is that I have a new online friend.
Oh.
And what happened is I belong to a cookbook club here, as everyone who listens to podcasts would know. Anyway, I started receiving messages, and this is not bad, but just I made a comment on something in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group, and this girl who is the wife of my friend in the cookbook club wrote me an email and said message and said, "Oh, I liked how you did that." I was like, "Oh, thanks." You know, when someone compliments you, you're always like, "Oh, that's nice. I like you, even though I don't know you." And then, so from then on, we sort of have had this sort of messaging relationship. So she got an SUP for her birthday, and I got one, and so we were messaging about that. And then she was messaging. We've been messaging about TV shows and podcasts and things like that. And I just thought, last week when I talked about missed connections, I was talking about I should also mention my maid connection that I've made.
Yes.
And to say that this is something that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been here. So, and it just made me think about that is just really lucky and lovely that I have this sort of new connection and new friendship. So I shouldn't always regret my missed connections. I should celebrate the ones that I've made as well. Anyway.
Well, and have you caught up in person as yet?
No, we haven't as yet, which is so weird because we live in the same city.
Well, that's all right. It took you and I a good few years.
I know, so. But we did live in different continents most of the time, so that's fair. But anyway, I mentioned her because she messaged me once. So she goes for long runs and she will send comments about podcasts or things that she listened to when she goes on the runs. And she said, "Oh, have you heard this podcast? And it's called Dying for Sex." And I said, "Yes, I have heard it." And she said, "I was listening to this chick called Mia Friedman do an interview with her." Now, I have to mention my new friend Jules is American. And, and I said, "Oh, yeah, Mia Friedman, I've heard of her." I said, she's big in the Australian media market. You know, it's not that big a market. So, yeah. And I had actually listened to the same podcast. So I'd listened to the No Filter podcast of Mia's interview with Nikki Boyer, who is the host of Dying for Sex. Mm-hmm. And that had made me seek out the Dying for Sex podcast. So I just want to say that Jules and I are really on the same wavelength with things we like. I'm dying to hear what she thinks about me watching Emily in Paris because I don't think that's going to get a thumbs up.
But I love Dying for Sex. Can you remember we did a review of it? I don't know. When was that? When did we talk about it?
Really a long time ago because I looked for it to see if I could find it in the past reviews and I couldn't see it. But, yeah, it came out quite a while ago, and then I think Mia is like a lagging interview in that it's been a while since it's come out. The whole season's out and then Mia interviewed her. But I wanted to say that I listened to it because of Mia's, and we've talked about Mia's No Filter interviews before and how they can direct you into something that you find really interesting. and enjoyable. Yes. And so I just wanted to mention both those things because I think it's been a while since we talked about Dying for Sex.
And if we need to jog people's memory, Dying for Sex is the one where they are two besties, one of them is dying, but she still has a sexual appetite and is still out there on the market and manages to really have more sex than the host who's not dying and is absolutely amazed by her friend's ability to put herself out there. But it's just a really, I loved it. I really loved Dying for Sex.
I did love it, but I also loved the story. And I guess I hadn't listened to any backstories about it. I loved the story about how it came about from that Mia told through their friendship. And also about how, you know, she was making it herself and she was making the podcast herself. Like she came up with this idea and was making it and then had pitched it to a few people and hadn't heard anything back. And then went and pitched it again and said, I'm going to release this podcast myself. Just checking one last time if you have any interest. And they wrote back and said, yeah, we want to do it. And then it was 1 year of production later that it got released.
Wow.
So it makes me really wonder about how it would have sounded if it wasn't taken up by a podcast production company. I really, because that's one of the things I think about and I listen to when I'm listening to podcasts is the level of production and the level of, you know, editing and just, you know, like it definitely sounds like a podcast that a lot of people have worked on and you know, all that kind of stuff. But I wonder how it would have sounded differently if she had just gone on herself and done the own production of it. That's really something that I've thought about quite a lot.
How much do you care about production? Because, I mean, I know you listen to some podcasts that are infinitely produced and then you listen to some that are two people sitting down at a table. So
using a laptop to record. Yeah, so, yeah, no, for sure. You know, it's about the level of engagement. I think there are some podcasts you wouldn't engage with if they didn't have the highly polished level of production. I think that shows, podcasts like, you know, Two Fat Expats, which are about people talking and are about a relationship, and we don't, you know, we're telling a story, our story and other people's stories, but it's not a progression of information or like it doesn't have to build, it doesn't have a story arc. I think those podcasts are really benefited by having professionals with, you know, those things in place that understand how all that works. So the answer is I'm not sure. And I don't know. I don't know if some podcasts I listen to and enjoy, I would enjoy so much. But as you're right, I do listen to podcasts that are scratchy and bits and bobs because I enjoy the conversation and the relationship. So yeah. I don't know the answer. What about you? What do you think about that?
Yeah, look, I definitely really enjoy the slick production of a great podcast, right? I think it just makes it, you know, especially if you're out riding your bike or you're out for a walk. But then I happily go to bed listening to something like, Mamma Mia Out Loud, where it's just three women having a conversation and there's no, you know, apart from a couple of ads thrown in or whatever, I find that really easy. But then I guess too, I don't care because I'm falling asleep. Do you know what I mean? I don't, yeah. I'll go, oh, that's all right. It doesn't matter if I miss the last half an hour and I don't ever get back to it. So maybe it's in the same way as television. You need your Emily in Paris for the hungover on the couch on a Sunday and might just have a little nap while I'm making my way through this, as well as you need your Bergens or Borgens, sorry.
Borgens. Yes. Now, have you seen any Borgens?
I haven't yet. I'm going to do that this week, I promise.
No. I just wondered because I want to get your feedback on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's my comment for the, and just, I'm going to throw it in because we've talked a long time and I know there's going to be a lot of editing, but I'm just going to throw in one thing in case you didn't know, Coach Joe has a podcast. Now, if you don't know who Coach Joe is, then what have you been doing during COVID? So go, if you have children, you'll know that Coach Joe is the BBC personality who was running video daily for exercise classes for the kids. He has gone on to have a podcast. Now, the podcast I noticed because it appeared in all my BBC podcast feeds, as old Coach Joe now has a podcast. But when I went and had a look at it, he's actually had it for several months. So I might be telling you something you already know. But obviously they decided it needed a bit of a bump. So then it just flew into all my BBC podcast feeds. You know how they cross-pollinate that sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I listened to a couple of episodes. I didn't really love it. But if you like Coach Joe, it might be your thing. So it's all about what's the one thing that makes life better. So, you know, Coach Joe asked some of his inspiring mates about their secret to physical and mental happiness. This is Sunshine in a Podcast. That's the spiel. And it's highly produced and it's a great podcast. But I guess that's a difference. Like when I'm listening to people I'm interested in hearing from, and then I won't go back and listen to the other ones. I think for a podcast that I really engage in or I'm really interested in, I'll go back and listen to episodes that I don't know who the person is. I just want to hear it because I want to hear about that.
Okay, Nikki Moffat, you have a good week. I hope that you know, numbers stay down and you're still out and about and that they don't need to shut down the cocktail bars or do whatever.
Yeah.
Most of all, good luck with your IB student and getting all that work done.
Oh, so excited, so excited. We've had a very big, big week of work during the fall break. And we've submitted three things, which is, God, my husband said, geez, this IB is a lot of work. I said, yeah, but we've already been to school.
Okay. All right. Catch you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.